A manager in a large company noticed a new man one day and told him to come into his office. "What is your name?" was the first thing the manager asked the new guy. "John," the new guy replied. The manager scowled. "Look, I don't know what kind of place you worked at before, but I don't call anyone by their first name. It breeds familiarity, and that leads to a breakdown in authority. I refer to my employees by their last name only, Smith, Jones, Baker. That's all. I am referred to only as Mr. Robertson. Now, we got that straight? What is your last name?" The new guy sighed and said, "Darling. My name is John Darling." "Okay, John. The next thing I want to tell you is..." "Well, thank God you finally got it. Maybe I should have said darling instead. For you, whatever. Well, the old proverb says, familiarity breeds contempt. You know, it also breeds children. The more familiar we are with someone, the more difficult it is to accept that person as an authority. It can also be embarrassing and even difficult to be surprised by the familiar. We experience it regularly. It is customary. We follow routine and habit. Even people we encounter can become familiar to the point of predictability. We prefer to deal with people and circumstances that are predictable. We expect certain reactions from those we know. So when someone familiar does something unexpected or different, we can be puzzled. The actions do not follow the script. The person did not meet my expectations. And what follows can be problematic. In these cases, it's usually best for us to reassess our expectations and re-examine our habits. So when have you limited yourself by staying with the customary, the predictable in your life? Well, something similar happens in today's gospel when Jesus preaches in his hometown synagogue. The audience thought they knew him. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" But what he preached, the fulfillment of the scriptures, was shocking to the point of their attempting to silence him for good. In the face of such objection, Jesus does not change his message. On the contrary, he says that no prophet is accepted in his own native place. And to further make the point, he alludes to two biblical stories about which his neighbors were quite familiar. Jesus refers to himself in the manner of Elijah, going to the widow in Zarephath, and Elisha to Naaman the Syrian. The ministry of Elijah and Elisha, who raised the dead, fed multitudes, and ministered to non-Israelites, prefigures Jesus' own ministry to those who are not Jewish and foreshadows the eventual Gentile mission. He demonstrates that it too is rooted in Scripture. And just as Elijah and Elisha went beyond the bounds of the Israelites, Jesus will do the same. More than the other evangelists, Luke roots his story in the prophets, John the Baptist, and Jesus himself in his ministry, passion, death, and subsequent entrance into glory follow God's plan. Jeremiah before him finds no welcome in his hometown. The prophet's life is not one of popularity and acclaim, but often includes derision and solitude. We like to hear Jesus say nice things, but when we hear challenges, we are not all that thrilled, maybe even surprised. We must always listen carefully to what Jesus is saying in his word and not try to read into what we think he ought to be saying. Luke is the New Testament author who uses the term God's plan more than any other New Testament author. Jesus behaves in a way wholly unexpected by those in his hometown who apparently knew him best. And rather than seek to silence him for good, they might have reassessed their own preconceptions. But as we know, reassessing our preconceptions is a difficult task. It's much easier to believe what I already know to be true. So, what are the areas in your life where you feel stifled by people's preconceptions of you? And how might you embrace the freedom of God to be who he is calling you to be? Mark Twain once said this: "What gets us into trouble is not what we don't know. It's what we know for sure that just ain't so." Our brains are hardwired to be comfortable with the familiar. We don't need to think about walking. We simply walk. We don't need to invest much mental energy in routine tasks simply because they are so familiar. The human brain spends minimal mental energy on the routine. And this is a good thing, as the brain can then spend its mental energy on other more critical tasks. When it comes to routine, the unexpected, by definition, does not conform to routine. So being open to the unexpected is probably a good habit for us to cultivate. We need to stir up an extra energy to be open to new things and new experiences, even new information that does not conform to what we already know, or even know for sure that just ain't so. Taking in new information that causes a change in our way of thinking, we experience a metanoia, conversion, to use a favorite term of Luke. We die to our old preconceived notions and allow something new to rise up. But sometimes our first reaction can be like the townspeople of Nazareth, and we can seek to destroy the messenger. What new information do we need to allow to influence us? Allowing that new information to shape or even change our minds is a difficult process. We let go of the past. We let go of some of our old ways of thinking. We let go of what just ain't so and embrace something new. On this fourth Sunday of ordinary time, may we be open to the unexpected, so it might simply be the plan of God.